Hello, everybody.
Welcome to another episode of Stop or My Mom Will Podcast.
Where I am woefully ill-prepared.
I have a list that I'm going to use. Okay, well this...
I thought this was going to be a wing-it one.
And I'm winging it with a list.
And then our cryptid one was
okay, we don't even know what the fuck we're talking about.
All right.
Happy Halloween, everybody. It's October something. Well, this is going to premiere on, I think, October 18th. Anyway, that's when it airs on Sepia, and then that's when I put it on my blog. So we decided for the last couple weeks of Halloween, we'd do some Halloween-centric shows. So first up, we thought we'd do a discussion, because we talk about movies a lot. We thought we'd do a discussion of some of our favorite horror movies and our approach to horror as a genre, why we love it so much. And I made a list of some movies I would talk about that I would refer back to. Apparently you were too good for that.
You didn't tell me. No, I told you.
Tell you not to make a list.
No, I told you that I wanted to talk about why certain things don't scare me. You know, I've watched horror movies all
but
my
in
life.
The context of horror movies.
Yeah, from very young, you know, and I don't watch them like normal people watch them. I don't do anything I don't think like normal people do it. My approach to reading books, you know, learning is all, everybody's unique, but.
Yeah, you pee in the sink and you eat through your asshole. It's amazing. It's just up is down. So. And then I was going to say a preview for next week. Next week we'll be doing an all cryptid episode.
And that's the one I was researching because I don't know a lot about
it. Well, yeah, and we'll do research on that, but you could research anything.
We've been doing this for how many months now? Almost a year, probably. And every time I come, like, with my computer or whatever, you're, like, all pissy about that.
Okay, first off, you did that once, and it shut down halfway through the episode, and we had to stop the episode because you were freaked out. Like, oh, no, I don't have my information. And we had to, like, literally record the second half of the episode
because
later.
Because you're always pulling it out. You're like, you're pulling it out your ass. Show me the money.
Stop pulling information out of your ass.
Show me the facts. Show me the names. And so when I bring those and have the connections all, you're like, yeah.
You act as if there's ever been a point where you have ever explained anything, facts or otherwise, that meant anything.
There will be next month when we have.
Always there will be. There will
be. In November?
Sometime in the amorphous future, down the line, you'll prove all the bullshit
These are your next
Are
your next 2 weeks. The whole month of November is my whole month, and it's Kennedy, all the time.
Well, thank you for preparing so much for my 2 weeks. Thanks for putting so much thought and detail into it. I'll sure to bring the same level of podcasting acumen to next
week.
Oh,
I'm sure you will. You aren't going to read a thing.
Well, I'm going to. You'll offer me shit to read, and then I'll read it, and I'll go, this is complete bullshit, and then I'll stop reading it, because that's what normal people do when they're reading complete bullshit. You keep going and keep buying them. Like, but that's beside the point. We're talking about horror movies. Our favorite horror movies. But first, before that, you wanted to talk about a show, because on one of our first episodes, we talked about the new Psycho show, Bates Motel, and how neither of us really enjoyed the pilot all that much.
Right, because all my life I've loved the Psycho, you know. I watched it when I was very young. That's one of the reasons I wanted to how I'm not scared of movies. I grew up watching these things. I grew up in a very just disjointed family. I wasn't really raised like by wolves.
but you weren't raised by wolves.
No, I wished I was raised by wolves, or monkeys, you know, whatever, praying mantis, something, anything would have been better. But no, I had to do it when I was very, very young. I had to do a lot of raising with my brother. My mother was elsewhere, and she would take us to these places and leave us sit in, like, cars, you know, and I would have to watch, we'd have McDonald's there, and I'd have to watch my brother, or she'd leave us in parks overnight when it got dark, and I had to watch my brother. So one of the things that we did is we went to this friend of hers house, and we would watch, they would put us in front of the TV, and we'd watch Tom Jones and Chilly Billy, you know, we'd stay up all night and watch these horror movies. So I remember seeing Psycho really, really early when I was young. And it, like I said, it didn't scare me. I think part of that was because my life, I was used to horrible things. I was used to being insecure, you know, which is what a scare does for you.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're abused as a kid, you know, you kind of grow up, show me more, show me worse, you know? So horror movies are just like, yeah, so what? You know? Where was my point there? I had a point. It totally flew out.
Once again,
my head.
I think we need to change the name of this podcast too. What was the point again? Because I can't count.
Because
we have Bates Motel, which we saw the first episode.
Right.
And now you have continued to watch it. You've gone on and watched.
Yeah.
Have you gotten through the whole first season yet? Or
no, I've not gotten it? Through the whole season, but I have read I know what's going to happen. Because that's how I do. I watch. I go
that's
to.
That's the worst way to watch TV shows.
Not for everything. Not for everything, but for this I did. Because I was curious to see what they were going to do with the brother. And because the brother wasn't, I mean, the brother is in the Ed Gein thing, but they're not even going. That's the thing. That show's not going for the Ed Gein influence at all. Because Ed Gein.
I don't
think
it necessarily needs to, but.
Well, it's okay. The Psycho movie was based on Block's work. Hitchcock even acknowledged that. Now, yes, did Hitchcock bring in elements? Yes, we had this argument before. He brought in elements of the Ed Gein. Now, I have a point to make, so please don't distract me.
Okay, just make sure it doesn't fly out of your head.
Okay. No. Where Hitchcock used the Ed Gein stuff is in the advertising for the movie, and, you know, playing that up, but also with the house. With the look of the house and the just the kind of the old farmy town feel, okay, of it. Norma Bates was not supposed to be this sex kitten, okay? She never was. Yes, she was sexually promiscuous, like in the book, and that's why Norman killed her, supposedly, and then the lore of the four movies they've done.
Movies? Are you counting,
I'm counting
the Bud Cortland too?
No. I'm counting, there was 1, 2, and 3 movies, and then they made a Showtime thing with Anthony Perkins came back, and he was talking to a psychologist, and that's where Henry Thomas plays him as a young man.
Oh, I don't think I saw that one.
And Olivia Hussey is his mother. Huh. And that's the one where they suggest sort of maybe a sexual molestation of Norman, you know, more of a kind of an incestuous thing with his mother. And we learn that he killed her and her lover. He poisoned them. And then stuffed her body and all of that.
Yeah.
Well, this show is going more. They're just making shit up and throwing Norman and his mother in.
Well, you kind of got a little bit of the incestuous stuff in the first episode, at least from what I saw. Just in terms of their.
Yeah, they're playing that a little bit. They're playing it a little bit, and then in the end of it, in the end of the first season, the mother divulges to Norman. It just seems like they're playing it more, just like. Too inappropriate, you know, like she's hugging him all the time and it's, you know, but she acknowledges that her brother or something forced himself on her. Basically, she always goes to Norman and tells him these things like too, you know, I don't need to know that.
Well, mom. One imagines that's where that starts. I mean, you don't go full on with, you know, molestation in the first season, you know.
But they're also, like, they're taking the in the series, they're taking the Norma Bates character. One, she's a pretty woman that's playing her. She's playing it very, you know, voluptuous, sexy. In the first episode, she's raped. And they also suggest that Norman killed his father because his father was attacking his mother.
I thought the first episode kind of implied that she killed him.
It did imply that, but at the end of the series, at the end of the first season, she says that she tells the brother. Now, yeah, he finds the father, but see, that's how they're going into the split personality.
Oh, so he's like blacking out.
They're saying he doesn't remember. So Norma is saying, like they had, and originally when she was being attacked by that guy that she killed, Norman comes in and hits him and knocks him out. Then he's not dead. She kills him when he comes to and starts saying shit, you know? So they're playing it up that every time she's attacked, Norman comes in and saves the day, you know? Yeah. And because they did it with the brother.
So it's the Popeye olive oil syndrome.
That's, I guess.
When the woman manipulates the man by putting herself in precarious situations where,
But, well, like, they're bringing all of these, young girls in, and I've got, like, the first episode, it bothered me, but it's really starting to bother me, the mixing of the look of the movie, you know, because they've all got their fucking cell phones. Norman Bates has a fucking cell phone.
So it's the classic elements versus the modern elements.
But then the teacher, when, you know, they have all these shots of her, and it's she's in the red lipstick, she's in the collared shirt, like... The 50s.
Yeah.
Her hair is done like the 50s, and she ends up being the first murder victim. And then there's this two tagline stories. One, the brother who never existed, who they've just made up this weird. He's got to protect the whole town is run by this $50 million pot area. They're growing pot, and it's all this vigilante justice. They just kind of take the law into their own hands. So that sheriff ends up being, you know, corrupt. Everybody's corrupt. It's like Twin Peaks. And, you know, the mixing of the having the 50s elements because they want us to remember the movie and then being jarred out of that feel.
Well, that was your problem with the pilot, too. Of course, what would you have felt with, I think, either it was an earlier draft of the script or maybe it was just an inaccurate depiction of, like, based on, like, a press release. But I think there were supposed to be supernatural elements originally.
I never read that, and I have not seen any. The other really.
But I mean, how would you have felt if they'd done that?
Hated it. You don't know. You know, because that's the whole thing. That's the thing about the story of Psycho, and what's always appealed to me about that type of psychological story. I grew up, you know, from being abused, I wasn't scared by shit. I wasn't scared. I'm still not scared of anything.
Okay. Let me put a spider in front of your fucking...
Okay, now there's a reason I'm afraid of spiders. And it's not a gut fear, it's a body fear. When I was young, when I was about 2 or 3, I was locked in... My parents had a coal cellar in their basement. And it's down in the basement, and it's a room that's under the house, basically, and that the old houses would throw coal in there for the fire, because we had a coal fireplace. And, when you closed it, it was pitch black. You couldn't see anything.
Okay, you fell into a place that had a lot of spiders in it. That's literally all you need to say.
Mice and spiders.
Do they need to know the mechanics of the door and the coal?
Well, I'm saying, if I had locked you in a totally complete pitch black room with and you heard nothing, spiders, things crawling on you, and you knew, and then when you were taken out, you saw the spider webs and the spiders, would you not have a lingering, pissy reaction to spiders?
My immediate fear might have been a little placated once they arrested you and, like, took me away to child services to go with a better family who doesn't lock their kid in fucking spider nests. I might have been, like, a little vindicated, like, well, I don't need to be scared of that shit anymore because I'm going with a good family. But other than that, yeah, I guess. But anyway...
But no.
Long story short, you didn't like Psycho when you first saw it, the first episode, still don't like it.
Well, because of how they're changing it. Because the thing that to me is scary about the Norman character is those aspects, and that's what I do like about the series: the split personality. Mm. You know,
I think the Bud Cort one was going to be supernatural as well, wasn't that like him and Lori Petty?
That I do remember hearing about.
It was going to be like the ghosts of the people he killed and shit.
I thought they were going to make that show, the Bud Cort show, sort of like what X-Files kind of became with the Bates storyline, almost like ghosts and you know, supernatural bullshit. But yeah, no, I wouldn't. I didn't end up liking that show.
Well, it wasn't a show.
I always liked Bud Cort, though. I think Bud Cort is a very underrated actor. My point about Norman is he was just a real human being. You know,
I was trying to remember what the movie Bud Cort's in that has Whoopi Goldberg and the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
I don't remember that.
Oh, fuck, what the... Well, Bud Cort is in it, inexplicably, as, like, a steam... Or, like, a not steampunk, but, what's the William Gibson thing? What do they call that?
Oh, cyber.
Cyberpunk. He's, like, a cyberpunk villain. Yeah. Imagine Bud Cort as a cyberpunk villain in a movie with Whoopi Goldberg as a cop, and her partner is a genetically cloned Tyrannosaurus Rex, and that's a movie that actually exists. But I can't. Theodore Rex, that's what it's called.
I remember the posters for that, but yes. I don't remember
Anyway, but sorry, that's a tangent. But go on.
Well, no, I know exactly why I don't like the series, because it's, like I said, that Psycho is one of my all-time favorite horror movies. You know?
See, even in the annals of Hitchcock, it's not my favorite. Like, I prefer The Birds to Psycho, personally.
The Birds was just too much in your face for me.
Well, because I'm I can imagine a bunch of birds going crazy and trying to kill me. Whereas, like it's more likely than, you know, a crazy innkeeper. I never go to fucking inns or hotels.
Well, that's not your life, though. But no, I have been in, you know, hotels and stuff.
Well, then let's talk about the other one that you always talk about having scared you. Another one that's very realistic.
Exactly.
The Texas Chainsaw
Series. And to me, they're similar.
They're both supposedly based on the Ed Gein series.
Yeah, elements. Well, Toby...
Texas Chainsaw a little more viscerally.
Toby Hooper totally acknowledges that he took the Gein case. He totally acknowledges that. You know, but the thing about the Psycho and the Ed Gein story and all of that, Ed Gein was sort of the first, not the first serial killer, but he was...
H.H. Holmes was the first serial killer.
And there's Albert Fish, too, you know, was the first, you know, known cannibal. Well, Jack the Ripper was the first serial killer, but no, I'm talking about, like, more... He was like Kennedy was the first television president, okay? Ed Gein was, like, the first television... You know, serial killer, because you saw that on your nightly news. It was in, you know, the newsreels.
Well, I never actually asked you, because you talk about how much you would love, in the sense of are scared by the original Texas Chainsaw, which, again, not that I don't like it, but I think it just gets really repetitive.
Well, yeah,
the entire movie is basically just like, hey, I wonder what's in that farmhouse. Bonk, dead.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder where my friend is. No. Maybe they're in that farmhouse.
It doesn't Bonk scare dead. Me now.
I wonder where my two friends are. Maybe they're in that
All
farmhouse.
Right, stop.
That's the movie.
If I'm going to watch it today, no. It doesn't scare me like it originally did. No. Okay. But the first few viewings, I still had to watch it through my eyes.
I was going to say, the last time I watched it with you, I remember you were like,
right, because
hands
he
in front of the
because
eyes.
I, movies like
I think it was
that,
the meat hook scene with the
movies that are designed, because I watch movies in my head too, not just through, you know, watching it through the screen. It's taking place. That's the thing about reading. When I read a horror book like Clive Barker, I'm making those images up in my head, and they're way more horrifying than anything they can put.
Well,
to screen.
Obviously, because they've never been able to do a Clive Barker story justice in the movies, but.
But, you know, so when I'm watching Texas Chainsaw, you know, I'm seeing those, and plus I already knew what actually Ed Gein did. Some people, a lot of people, going to see Texas Chainsaw have no idea who Ed Gein is.
But no, but the question I wanted to ask is, what do you think of my favorite movie in that series, Texas Chainsaw 2, the insane parody of the first
that,
one?
That I enjoyed it as a movie. But that began the error, what, there was before that too, but it became like the comedy, adding the comedy to the horror. And that, okay, it's like, I'm not scared, why should I be scared of Jason? You know, why should I be scared of Jason?
Well, that's the thing, at that point, horror movies became less about scaring you by the, because originally, you know, when you think of like Halloween versus Friday the 13th. The idea with Halloween, you put yourself in the position of Laurie Strode.
Yeah.
And you were following her along. You were with her and empathizing with her, and you were living the threat, you know? The
uh-huh.
threat was after you, just as it was after her.
Right.
Once you get to Friday the 13th, at least once you get to the many, many sequels, you're supposed to identify with Jason.
Right.
And the killer, the people that he's killing are just the fodder, and you're supposed to find
it.
You're supposed to hate the characters just like he does, and
there is
rejoice
exactly
in their death.
There was a certain point where movies like that turned, and you became the killer.
It was around the mid-80s to the 90s, yeah.
So, one, why should I be scared of that? And also, you know, why should I want to be that? I should be wondering about me if I want to identify with this person that's killing all these people. You know?
Well, I mean, that's slasher movies. That's just how that turned out. I mean, I don't think he even...
But Psycho was could be considered the first slasher movie, and it wasn't like that.
Well, yeah, because it was prior to that oversaturation of, you know, there's only so many ways you can make characters empathetic so that you want to root for them. Eventually, it's just going to turn into gratuitous violence.
And I think...
And a glorification of gratuitous violence.
Just like the people that grew up, you know, after the bomb... they were scared of different things. Prior to the bomb dropping, you know, there were different ways of scaring us. After the bomb, sort of like, it's like, okay, all bets are off. You know, I mean,
I don't know if you're trying to find a social sort of, and you brought up the bomb thing before. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's as simplistic as that.
No, I totally think that the Kennedy assassination is one of the reasons why I don't watch movies like horror movies the same way, because it was a national horror movie played out in real life across our TV screens.
Okay, you just were dying to fucking wedge that in. So, like, literally, as we were talking about, hey, let's do a horror movie episode for Halloween, you were like, ooh, how can I bring Kennedy into this? Ooh, I'm going to have that in my back pocket.
No, I specifically said to you, those are the reasons I feel I react to horror differently than other people do.
Well, let me first crumble up, as you can hear, one of my lists, because this was sort of the rough one.
Oh my god, there were two lists!
Well, I had a rough one, and then I made it into a better one. And
I have one movie, Psycho.
Let me refer back to my list to say what we were going to talk about, or at least what I was. Well, because you talk about the way horror has evolved, and I thought it was incumbent upon me to bring up some modern, recent horror movies that I thought actually were either worked as horror movies or just worked generally speaking. Because at least one of them doesn't really work as a horror movie.
Something can work as a movie for me, but not work as
a horror. Well, because when I just saw Escape from Tomorrow, which I keep calling Escape from Tomorrowland, but that's actually not what it's called, because they would get sued. But it's a psychological horror movie filmed entirely at Disneyland and Disney World. Basically, it was like guerrilla film. They took cameras in, pretended to be tourists, and filmed a movie. And it's this, like, sort of paranoia thing where, like, they're going through, it's a small world, and then they CGI, like, demon faces on all the dolls, like, these going insane, and the dolls start, you know, growing fangs. Okay. Now, what I was talking about before some weird technical glitch happened, Escape from Tomorrow, a movie that they filmed completely, sort of guerrilla style in Disney. They went to Disney World and Disneyland, took in cameras like they were tourists, and filmed this weird psychological thriller. And it ultimately doesn't work because they could have used a lot more Disney stuff. I don't know if they would have gotten sued if they did. But it just seems like a mishmash. But just, like, the spirit of doing that, the spirit of taking this sort of beloved icon and turning it into the setting of a horror movie, you know, is so original. And, I don't think it's ever been done before, at least in that way, in the way of, like, actually doing it at the place,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're sort of skating by the skin of their teeth in terms of, like, right to parody, but, like...
Right, but I also wanted, with that, okay, for instance, I just wished you guys make that movie, and it's a 7-minute movie, 10-minute movie?
Oh, yeah, for context, me and a bunch of my friends, the Edwin J. Hill Production Company, we took part in this local Columbus event called the 3 Days of Terror. It's for MOFA, the Mid-Ohio Filmmakers Association. And basically, it's over a weekend. You go from Friday to Sunday, you make a short film, a 5 to 10 minute short film. It's got to be horror-related, and then they give you, like, a specific genre. We got period horror, you know, a horror movie set in another time period. And they give you certain elements, like the first shot had to be a light source illuminating. There were sound effects, videos, etc. And you have to film basically all of it, write it, produce it, film it, edit it all in one weekend. And that's what we did last weekend.
Okay, so my point about this is, I had a bit part.
Yes.
And look how many times they shot, you know, okay, do that, open that, again, do that, you know. It's like 20 times you guys do a take. Right. You know, and that, you know, that little 10-minute movie took all day to film. And then another whole day to edit it together. But the thing is, they were in Disneyland maybe one day, or maybe even if more than one time.
No, they were there for a season. They all bought season passes.
Oh, okay. So they filmed it over a length of time.
Yeah, over like a couple months.
But the way they're doing it, you know, it's like they had to do it on the fly.
Yeah.
Because and sneak it because you know, acting out those parts. Somebody would have seen that, you know.
Well, apparently they got caught once when they thought they were paparazzi, like there was like a celebrity family or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then they explained it. But like they would actually have to like dress up like tourists when they're walking in, you know, to pretend that they're different people. And
right, but my point is, and then sort of continuity. You know, they have to remember, have to have everything filmed because if they were dressed up like different people, so they wouldn't be seen on cameras or whatever sneaking in there.
Yeah.
You know, they have to remember, okay, what was I dressed like here? Where was I?
Well, I mean, they all wear the same outfits in the movie, though. It's just one family over one day, so they know their outfit.
No, my point was, you said, you know, they could have done so much more with the Disneyland
stuff.
Well,
just more
maybe
like...
Maybe they did as much as they had.
More with, like, the iconography of specific... Like, there are certain little references. Like, at one point, they talk about the princesses, the women in the outfits, that they're actually, like, high-priced courtesans for rich Asian businessmen. Who pay for women in costume, and like they eventually get to Epcot Center, and there's this sort of secret lab, and there are robots and animatronics and shit, and they do a lot with it, but they don't do. It just seems like when it all ultimately comes together, it doesn't come together in a way that like it could, except for a few references here and there. It could have been shot at any theme park.
Right, but would you consider...
not that it even had to be, like, an indictment of Disney, but at least use more of that, you know, that iconography. That just bothered me a little bit. But other than that, but just, like I said, just the spirit of it intrigued me.
Does it have, like, any payoff at all? I mean, it's like, you know, how they have the conspiracy theory about Disney being demonic and... You know, you don't know anything about that?
No, I know. I was trying to think as far as connection to the film. They actually have this one shot of him, and I don't know if it's real or if they CGI'd to split it, but where it's like Walt Disney speaking at some engagement, and then above there's a skywriter that's writing Jesus. And I don't know if that's, again, you know, if that was something that was actually filmed or what.
Or was it advertised more of a comedy horror than which they have now than horror. Yeah.
Well, no, I wouldn't say. I mean, there are comedic moments. A lot of it is like this one guy, the husband, he's having like a midlife crisis, and he's following these two French teenage girls around, and he's like, he's got his kid with him, but the wife's not there, so he's like, he's going on all the rides they're going on to be able to stare at them. And of course, it turns out they're part of the conspiracy. But like, as far as like the Disney stuff, like in Epcot, they imply that. The actual Epcot, the big dome, is like it has this sort of secret purpose that, you know, like they put a little miniature version of it on his head, and it's sort of like creating virtual reality, sort of like a Matrix thing. But none of it really, it all just seems like incidental gags focused around that stuff rather than, you know, a cohesive story, which you could have done.
Well, I think, like, if you're talking about. Okay, if you're going to judge that based on it being a horror movie, I don't see that as a horror movie. I see that, but, you know, most of the horror anymore for me, ever since Evil Dead, you know, Shaun of the Dead,
yeah.
These posters we have sitting right up here in the living room.
Paranorman right behind you.
Cabin in the Sky.
Cabin in the Woods. Cabin in the Sky. I think that was a Miyazaki movie.
Cabin in the Woods. You know, well, Joss Whedon on television. And
again, it's Joss Whedon, not
Josh. Joss Whedon on television. Anyway!
Jesus, that's not going to hurt the mic at all.
Ever since those, you know, it's like, I don't think movies are designed to scare us anymore. I think they're designed to move us, well, make us interested in watching.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of, and again, you cite Cabin in the Woods, which was one of my favorite movies of last year, but yeah. It's very much sort of meta, up its own ass horror. It's not scary, and that's the one. The movie I was really referencing when I said something that works as a movie but not as a horror movie. It's a great movie. It's funny as hell, but as a horror movie, every time they go for that, it's undercut by the comedy, and that's a lot of horror today. Like even like the Scream franchise, which a lot of people said revitalized horror at the time, it did it by making it self-referential and kind of. You know, again, meta and up its own ass, and
but I had like, not watched until the Scream series. I really did like them.
Again, you liked it, but now, were you scared of it? That's the thing.
No, but that, like I said, I'm not scared of anything.
But I mean, could you even see those movies? Well, that's what I was going to.
No, not those. Not exactly. Those at all. But that's what I was going to mention. The last movie. I mean, I can't think of the last movie that scared me, where I was putting myself in that situation going, oh my God, what would I do if that was me? Because that's what horror is for me. I got to put myself in that thing. Were the Hellraiser movies. Because it's like, you know, that kind of thing, it's unknown, you know, we don't know other, like, you know, demons and stuff like that. And, you know, just the ripping the guy apart and showing that. You know, they didn't even have to show it because it was already in my head from the book, you know. So I had the built-in image, and then having the sound and seeing Pinhead, that scared me.
I don't know. I mean, well, to me, the scary thing about the Cenobites, generally speaking, is something that I think was lost in the later series. They did it in the first two, which, you know, Clive Barker had a hand in, but after that they kind of lost it, which was that they're sort of like the Borg, in that they aren't, like, evil. Like, they're not, like, demons that are just trying to hurt you. The thing that's always I found creepy about them is that they think they're doing you a favor. Like, you summon them, and they're like, this is this great new thing we've discovered called, you know, pleasure through intense hellish pain, and we're going to show that to you because you asked for it. And it's like, that's, it's sort of, a, you know, playing on human, much in the same way that, like Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, it's sort of playing on human evil at the, like, at the end of the day, it's sort of like a, almost like a be careful what you wish for, you know, it's your own personal flaws that are ultimately going to destroy you, because the dreams are always like, you know, your own insecurities that he turns against you.
It, well, if I wanted to be creeped out, I've always gone for the old classic monster movies.
Really?
But watching them without sound. Like, yeah, I turn the sound. I like the imagery of that. It's very, very, certain of them are very creepy.
Well, actually, I did
like
have
The Fly. The Fly is one of my all-time favorites, the original Fly.
Yeah.
And you know what? I did not mind when they did it with the Jeff Goldblum. I didn't mind that.
I mean, that was when Cronenberg was still good.
I just called him the Jeff Goldblum.
I love the Jeff Goldblum. but no, that was back when Cronenberg was still doing really good body
horror
movies. But
one of my favorite old horror movies is The Fly with Vincent Price. I used to love Vincent Price, but...
Wait, no, he wasn't in the original. He was in the sequel, wasn't he?
No, he was in the original. The first one.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I think he was in the sequel.
No, he was in the original.
All right.
The Fly. He was in the original.
I'd have to watch it again, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
And okay, well, what? No, I remember this. I remember the scene, that very scene. I mean, I can call it up in my head, where at the end they're looking through the spider web, and there's the little fly with the man head going, help me.
Because I actually did have a list of my top five classic horror movies.
Is that one?
No, it's not. Because on the top of my list is Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Oh, yes, all-time favorite.
I think it's very underrated.
All-time favorite.
The fucking rat and the dish.
In fact, I took up that space in the window, but I was going to do a big window display of that.
You realize they can't see the window on a podcast, right? We're sitting in this room, we can see it. But, like, when they look over to their window, it's a completely different window.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, then I got Freaks, Todd Browning's Freaks, the one good Todd Browning movie, not...
No, you know what I really liked? Have you ever seen Gods and Monsters?
Oh, the Ian McKellen?
Yeah.
Him as...
was really good. You know, worked on different levels for me.
Wow.
See, I think the definition of horror should be adjusted per person.
So you think homosexuals are horrifying to you? Is that
no.
Gods and Monsters? It's so gay people being treated as human beings. It's so frightening.
No.
Where's the nearest tea party get together?
No.
We gotta shut down the government over this.
I think that, you know, it's like, I don't. What are you guys, like, your generation? What are you afraid of?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for my generation. I don't know. I mean,
because you're very. Not apathetic. That's not the word I want to use.
I mean,
but you're kind of nonchalant about, you know, history, life.
If this generation's horror movies that make a lot of money are any indication, I think most of my generation is scared of really wobbly cameras. Because there's a new fucking Paranormal Activity movie every year, and a new fucking found footage movie every month. And I say that bitter, even though I actually wrote one and submitted it to an agent. But
okay, go on.
But it's a deconstruction. Then after that, and this probably doesn't count, but the original one I would submit at least does. But I love the entire franchise. The Godzilla movies.
See, those don't scare me.
Well, the first one to watch, is a legitimate horror movie. Scary. The sec after that, they just become...
Well, no, the original Godzilla movies, all of them, not even as a kid they didn't scare me, because they were looked at sort of like a joke, you know?
But the first one is a legitimate horror movie.
Right, but, I mean, I haven't liked any of them when they remade it with Matthew Broderick and all that.
Well, of course, now that they're making a new one, and it looks awesome. It's the guy who did, you probably didn't see it, Monsters. It's an independent horror movie. It's on Netflix, and I actually do recommend it. It came out a couple years ago, like 2007, 2008. It's about like giant monsters come up. It's like Pacific Rim if you never saw the monsters. Like they create this like section of the world that's like a preserve where you know you can't go through it because there's monsters everywhere. Mm-hmm. But it's about a bunch of people go through it. And anyway, but they hired that guy to direct the next Godzilla movie, and they released a trailer briefly online. I think they took it down immediately, and it looks fucking awesome. Like you see like this the outline of some dead monster parts, and then you see, you know, the silhouette of him screaming, and you have the "I am become death" speech over it. It looks awesome.
Well, it's like I don't like the Godzilla movies, but I loved that. The host.
Yes, you very enamored. Surprisingly, enamored.
Oh my gosh! Yes, because that
I did not think you would like that movie that much.
Because I don't like creature monster movies. I don't like them. Yeah. The payoff is never. The monster can't be scary enough for me, and the payoff is never...
Well, I think the problem is those are so broad and wide, you know, a large scope, you know, is examined. It's always people running away in a city, whereas that one, it's centered around a family, and you could kind of engage with them and personalize it through them.
To me, though, they're always sort of like the same thing as that Mel Gibson movie with the aliens.
Oh, Signs?
Yes. The payoff at the end of that, you go through that whole movie, you're going, okay, what are the aliens going to be real? Okay, what are they going to look like? Then they look like fucking, I could have done that, you know, I could have made that costume with whatever I had laying around the house. It, you know, the payoff isn't there for me. And the same thing as in Cabin in the Woods. Loved that movie.
You don't think that had a good payoff?
No. To me,
the giant swarm of every monster imaginable?
Yes, it was a good payoff, but it could have been so much bigger. So much bigger.
Really?
Yes.
I think that's a little nitpicky at that point.
No.
I mean, the giant flood of monsters into one room and all the different, I mean.
But that's what I like.
And then the giant hand of apocalypse, I think.
That's what creeps me out about the classic horror monsters, because like Lon Chaney, the time that he took on building those faces and that makeup, that's creepy. You know, there are truly
the fact that he tried hard is creepy?
No, the result, the end results of, you know, and when you, like, if you go look up online, Bride of Frankenstein, yes. Where they had her in the costume and they took all these different shots. I mean, truly beautiful, but creepy.
Well, we can talk about that one because that's actually the next one on my list. I was trying to think of all the, as far as Frankenstein, Dracula, Bride of Frankenstein, it's my favorite Frankenstein movie
Pretorius.
And one of my favorite.
Yeah,
and that's why, because Dr. Fucking Pretorius is the creepiest.
Has little bodies in...
And he's just so delighted in himself. Like, he's just so, yes, I'm the creepiest motherfucker you'll ever meet, and I'm so happy about it.
Well, and then another movie that of those classic movies that truly and still creeps me out when I think about it, The Black Cat.
He's skinning him alive,
and you know, yeah.
Well, I always mix that up because they had the Black Cat and then they had the Raven. And neither of them had anything to do with the Edgar Allan Poe stories. But,
But, no, I totally believe that I grew up differently. And so, my generation, I don't think, was scared the same way that my parents' generation was. And your generation was, it's like you're not scared of anything.
That's what makes us better.
They can make, like that movie I hate, the Centipede one.
See, you hate it. But I think that is the quintessential modern-day horror movie. Because just the premise of it freaks you the fuck out.
Yes, true.
They don't even need to do anything but explain in a one-word fucking logline what that is, and you're, like, terrified.
All right, then don't you think that movie would have been better to be made like a Psycho, where you don't see stuff?
You've never seen the movie, though, have you?
You said, yes, I have.
Well, then you would know that you don't really see stuff. You do in the second one. The second one's gory as fuck.
Your not seeing stuff and my not seeing stuff, I think, are two different diameters.
You never see, like, lips sewed onto asshole. It's all kind of covered up by cloth and shit. Yeah, you see them kind of, and you know, making the faces and the noises and stuff, but no. But no, yeah, I would disagree entirely. And then my last one, as far as the classics, was probably not on your list, and more of a sci-fi movie than a horror movie, Fiend Without a Face. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, the old one?
The crawling brains that are invisible. And,
right, long, long time ago.
I don't know, crawling brains with tentacles have always freaked me out. When I was a kid, my dad gave us, you know, we were allowed to read his old comic collection, and he had a lot of Basil Wolverton's old stuff, one of my favorite artists, Basil Wolverton. And he had this one story, The Brain Bats of Venus, and they were these giant brains with sort of octopus tentacles, and they would land on your head and then control your mind. And so at the end, it was the classic sort of Twilight Zone twist ending, where it's like, and now everything I've been telling you is a lie because I've been controlled by them the whole time. And you pan up and he's got it on his head.
When you were little.
And so that always affected me.
When you were little. See, because when I was growing up, when I was young, my formative television years, you know, we had like One Step Beyond, The Twilight Zone, The Sixth Sense Outer Limits.
Night Gallery.
Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Okay, now those were all on, you know, probably every night of the week I was exposed to some kind of show like that, okay? So I grew up, and plus I had no censorship because I watched my brother. So I would stay up late and watch TV.
Well, when I was growing up, we had Tales from the Crypt. We had, you know,
but like I said, but,
monsters.
But most of the Tales from the Crypt... There were a couple block, the one about the grandfather that's fallen apart.
Yeah.
That's a Robert Block.
And then we had Tales from the Dark Side. We had The Twilight Zone 1980s. You know, we had our fair share. And by that point, we had, like, cable. So we had, like, the Sci-Fi Channel, which would show horror movies. A lot of my love of, like, 80s and 90s stuff comes from first seeing them on there as a kid and then tracking them down.
Right, but what I'm saying is the difference in those, like, the remakes of The Twilight Zone and the remakes of the, you know, the Hitchcock thing, they were tamer, it seemed. They were not as dark. It's like this whole kind of make it funny, give it an edge.
Well, I think
took the scare off even more.
I mean, I don't know necessarily know that. Well, it's like that.
Another thing that movie that scared me and probably still does those It's Alive movies, because I can, as a woman, I can have a baby, and
Well, of course, by the
that
end
that was
of,
pretty much your birth and George's
by
birth.
By the end of that series,
me.
Aren't the It's Alive babies sort of like the good guys in it? Like, aren't they defending them in court and shit?
Yes, with Matt, yes.
With the guy from all the Larry Cohen movies. What's his fuck?
Matthew Moriarty?
Yeah, Michael Moriarty, yeah.
Michael Moriarty?
I think he's their lawyer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was fun. No, but the first It's Alive movie is pretty, you know, for its time, was like, holy shit!
Well, it's sort of the joke is they escalate where it's like, oh, what's going to be a killer now? You got a killer leprechaun? You got a killer snowman? And it's like, that started out with like, okay, we're going to have a killer baby. And that's before all the weird ones, you know, but I don't know. And then you have Basket Case where it's the killer Siamese twin.
Now those are creepy. See, I was trying to think of what in the last 5 years has scared me. And I can't think of one.
Well, I mean, as far as scaring... I can't think. I mean, I'm going down my list of the top recent ones I can think of. Did you see Mama?
No, I did not.
Again, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's scary, but it's creepier than I would think a movie could be.
And there's another one that has been recommended to me, May, M-A-Y, May.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it. I've seen, like, the DVD box cover, but yeah, I think it's, like, some creepy girl that's killing people. But no, Mama, and it's a very simple... concept as far as the design of it. It's like one of those things where it's like, wow, why has nobody done this before, where her bones are all broken because she fell off a cliff, she jumped off a cliff, mm-hmm. And it's her ghost, and the ghost moves with like this sort of spindly kind of almost like tentacle thing with her arms because all of her bones are broken, and that sort of carries over to her ghost form,
mm-hmm.
And it's just, it makes it particularly creepy. Like at one point she climbs into a woman and like basically overgrows her through the inside, and it's just like, and it's sort of that weird merging of some kind of fairy tale horror, and it again, it's not outright scary, but it's more unsettling than any horror movie I think I've seen in a while. And then also the other one I was going to bring up, the two, I don't think you saw these either, the two VHS movies. VHS and VHS 2, the two found footage anthology movies.
I haven't seen those.
Not, again, not as horror movies, but a lot of really novel things that they do. Like, there's one short where, in the first one, where it the killer is in the camera. It's like when the camera glitches, the killer is there in the glitch. So, like, somebody will be standing there, and then the camera will glitch right next to him and then slit his throat. And it's like a, it's sort of like a reverse slasher movie where this girl who was the final girl in a previous adventure with this monster, she was the last survivor of this monster, she brings all her dipshit friends to be bait so that she can lure the monster and kill it. And just stuff like this, really novel ideas. Like, the first one has this sort of, like, weird evil nymph thing that kills him in a hotel room, and the second one has a zombie POV movie where a guy, he's on a bike ride, and he puts a camera, he's recording his daily bike ride, and then he gets bitten by a zombie, so the whole through the whole thing, you're seeing it from the zombie's point of view.
But see, that, like, okay, after things like Jonestown were played out on TV.
And I'll go back to that, because there's actually a thing in VHS 2 about Jonestown.
Okay, but my point is, your generation, I can't imagine, you know, what would scare you?
Well, I think at this point it has to be on an individual level. It has to be something like we talked about with you and spiders. If you watched a movie, if I got Big Ass Spider, it's a new spider.
Oh, I can't. I loved Arachnophobia.
Yeah.
I can't watch it.
Exactly. But that's because that's a personal thing for you. And like for me, one of the things that I don't know, and I can't think of anything like in my life that created it, but for some reason it's always freaked me out. And I actually recently wrote a horror script with a friend of mine called Big Baby, about a guy who's transformed into a giant baby. This woman abducts him and chains him to a crib and forces him to shit himself and tears his teeth out and cuts his Achilles tendon. But anyway, that idea, but specific. And then there's a character in it named Susie who's already been fully indoctrinated to like the life. And for some reason that loss of personality when you've been taken and tortured and transformed into something else, so much so that your mind is gone. And that you basically, like, almost like Stockholm syndrome, like you've acquiesced to it. That's always creeped me out. I don't know why. And again, maybe it's just because, you know, I have such an individualist streak that the loss of individuality or the loss of my partner, I think,
I'm going to react to things like, you know, about women or, you know, that make me think about different, you know, that's Clive Barker's work. The reason it's so body oriented, you know,
because that's very easy to personalize that.
Yeah,
and, you know, my hands might take control and cut themselves off.
Just
you know?
The imagery of it, you know, the way he describes his even you know his Cthulhu type kind of monsters, you know, it's so original.
Yeah,
you know, but when I came to Clive Barker, it's like he was like brand new because everything had been done, but he was doing the same thing that other people, you know, other writers had done, but he was doing it in such a unique, fresh way.
Well, I think it's so visceral is the thing.
I don't think he's gotten near the attention that he should.
Well, no, he did back in his day in the 80s and 90s.
No, people didn't know about
him. The problem with him, like, because he never got the Stephen King treatment.
Right.
Where you,
and he deserved the Stephen King treatment.
Well, because Stephen King's movies are very easy to make into films, and that's why Stephen King is where he is. As much as I like Stephen King a lot more than you do, much more as a sort of fantasy author than a horror author. I view most of it in the sort of the Dark Tower.
No, thing. Here's what, but, when the thing about King for me, you know, beyond, it has nothing to do with the recent book he wrote. The thing about King for me is within his books, he puts all those, you know, recognizable cultural references. In fact, I just made a comment about this on one of my forums because to me, it's lazy. He's being a lazy writer. Yeah, he's dropping all these things because then the reader will go, oh, I know that. I know that song. I know that, you know, thing. I relate to that, so that makes me a part of this book.
Yeah, it's a pop culture reference, sure, and it's very, he does it a lot, but
it's, oh, he does it all the time.
At the same time, though,
in every every fucking book.
I don't
book.
Think the enjoyment of any given book hinges on the that reference.
I'm going to take a Stephen King book, and I'm going to highlight every pop separate.
No, I'm not saying that reference. He doesn't do it or doesn't do it often. I'm just saying, like, if you read It, and he makes a bunch of pop culture references in it, that doesn't, like, take away from what's good about that book.
Okay, we're not talking about books. We're talking about movies. Stephen King sucks, but I'm not going to have an hour-long episode.
A couple things we lost. One, we were talking about the loss of identity and why that's freaky. That's probably why the Body Snatcher movies scared me so much as a kid.
But see, to me, they didn't scare me. Even like the original was creepy, like the end when he does that. Because they were plants.
But it's just the idea that you fight so hard to retain your individuality against this force of conformity, and then it takes you over. There's no hope. You are taken by it, and it's gone. You're lost. Uh-huh. There's no hope but to conform. And for somebody like me, if you've ever heard this podcast before, you could imagine how terrifying that is.
I wonder if in the 50s, if you would have been like, pro Hoover and be all like anti communism because that's what they taught. They taught that they were going to come and take your mind over and indoctrinate you. That's what they taught. So would you have
But they were trying to do that though. The people that were teaching that were the fascists.
But they didn't. You didn't. People your age. I'm saying if you were a young person at that time, would you have?
I was a young person during the Bush era, and I wasn't like a fucking Republican.
That's not what I mean.
I don't know what you mean. But no, and then the other thing you were talking about, Jonestown in VHS 2. There's actually a whole segment set in it's Indonesian, but it's a cult, a very Jonestown-esque cult. And it's the idea is like, what if they are right in the sense of like their doom predictions, mm-hmm. like demons start coming out exactly when they say it does, and it's just sort of this chaos of zombies and fucking suicides and shit.
Well, when I was young and in the Christian thing, they would screen movies every Friday night on a projector, and they would show the Christian made ones. And they had, just like they had those little tracks, you know, that told you were going to hell and had all the pictures of hell, cartoons of hell to terrify you.
Which they were
you.
Still passing out when I was in high school and probably still are.
They're called Chick Publications. He made millions of them. But they made movies about the rapture. And, you know, it's like you'd come home and then everybody would be gone and you'd be left by yourself. But then the Mark of the Beast would come. I mean, so it's like every day to me was indoctrination of, be scared of this, be scared of this, be scared of this. I didn't have time to be scared of movies, you know? I was like, jeez.
Well, to wrap up, I don't know. Do you want to go into a part two or do you want to just...
Let's go into a part two if it's over an hour.
Okay. Well, then to wrap up this part one, you talk about that. You talk about the kind of rapture stuff. The last movie on my list of recent horror movies. And I don't know if you've seen this one. I think you would like it. Red State?
I want to see it. I keep not.
It's been on Netflix ever.
Netflix streaming. I know. I totally want to see it.
You have any night of the week. You could literally turn this fucking movie on.
But then Grey's Anatomy's on. I missed last night's, so I gotta watch it today.
But
on
one of my favorite horror movies of the last 10 years. It's about within 10 years. And from one of my favorite writer directors, Kevin Smith. It's insane to me that you haven't seen it.
Dogma is one of my probably top 10 movies.
But it's that, but it's him taking on basically like the thought process that went into your family.
Yeah, well, I think Dogma and that would probably be a good double feature.
Well, because originally he actually had an idea for a sequel to Dogma. And it was sort of like, it was more about like Islamic terrorism and like the, you know, all the doom prophecy and stuff. And it would be a sequel following the daughter of the girl from Dogma as a teenager.
Okay. Yeah. That's not born. Okay.
But he can never do it because of the budget. It would be too big. But the interesting thing also, I can't even say the interesting thing because you haven't seen it, so you don't know the end. But there was an alternate ending where...
No, I know about it. I've heard his podcast.
So oh, okay. So yeah, but there's the alternate ending where the angels actually come down and are stabbing people.
They've done that. We've had that in Supernatural. With the angels being violent and...
But you haven't... Have you not watched any of the episodes from the season yet?
No.
I think they've had two so far.
No, I have not.
Oh. Because it's all about the angels coming down because they've been all fallen.
No, I have not watched either of those assholes. Yet.
But Red State, just how much of a surprise it was coming from Kevin Smith that he would do a horror movie and do it that well. It's probably the best directed. As much as Dogma's still my favorite, Red State's probably the best directed Kevin Smith movie.
How much would you say, percentage-wise, is his comedy, like Dogma was comedy with horror elements?
Yeah.
Is this more, more horror elements?
Oh, it's all comedy? It's a horror movie. It's not a comedy.
Oh. He doesn't have little gags?
No, here and there, and like the end is kind of a gag, but for the most part, no, it's unsettling from beginning to end. It's a horror movie. It's a straight horror movie.
Okay, so what is scary about it to you?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's particularly scary, only in the sense that, because, you know, obviously it's based on, like, the Westboro Baptist people, and it's very much, like, I can believe that those people are like that, even though I know they're technically not, like, they're, at least as far as I know, they don't have dungeons and shit where they kill people.
Okay.
But I can believe there are people, that's like you with the Texas Chainsaw, like, you always talked about, like, I walked around a house like that.
Yeah.
I can believe that these people are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that they even the ones that sound like good Christian people, that some of them are these people.
Yeah,
you know?
You could totally see it happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Because there's such a strain of that. I mean, look, we just shut down the government because, you know, 25% of the country is so indoctrinated by this sort of theocratic Republican fucking bullshit that they think, well, the apocalypse is going to happen anyway, so why not destroy the world economy? We can go over the debt ceiling, fine.
Well, it's like,
I mean, those people, they are real.
On my OkCupid, I just had a guy, he didn't write to me, but he keeps looking at my page, and I looked at his profile, and it says, he's a man of God, he's a professional man of God, and he's on this site, he's passionate, and he's basically looking for hookups, you know, on this site. And he said, he says, what would I do if one of my congregation found my profile? He said, you know, it makes a joke, oh, I'd lie to them, lie through my teeth or whatever. And I'm like, it just, that whole thing was totally creepy to me, to even
read. Well, I think religion in general is, one of the creepiest X-Files episodes, not counting the one with the moms on the thing in the base, under the bed.
It's called Home.
Yeah, Home. That episode. But one of the creepiest ones, did you ever see the one with the snake handlers?
Oh, yeah.
That was, I don't know, just religion in general is a fucking creepy thing.
Well, and
people, it's because it's like zombies, like people that, like, would otherwise be reasonable, but for whatever reason aren't. They've all gone mad.
Well,
like, and that's religion to me, so.
But it's when I was, after they took us out of the Catholic Church, let's see, I went to catechism, so forfeiture, I was six or seven. When she started to take us out of the Catholic Church and took us into the born-again Christian. And the first one was this guy named Mel Howman. And he used to have those snake handler-type meetings. He'd stand up and you know, call the spirit down, and everybody would dance in the aisles.
And speak in tongues.
And they would fall down under the, what they called it, falling under the spirit, which means they'd fall on the ground. And people would Mel would lay his hand on them, and they'd fall down backwards. And I'm seeing all this at 7 years of age. I'm just in a church, and everybody's chanting these uniform tunes. He's sitting people down in chairs and doing this prayer and making them, their leg is extending, like their legs would be uneven, right? It's an old thing. It's easy to do. I can show you how to sit in a chair and you kind of adjust your thing. But he would have them do that, and like the leg was growing, very close to like, fucking chicken heads out of people.
Well, because that's the thing. I can't, like, to me, it's like if you're in a room and then a bunch of people turn around and go, oh, yeah, we eat people. And, like, they're otherwise, like, decent looking, like, they look like regular any other people. But it's like, yeah, we're cannibals. We're going to eat you now. That's the same feeling I get when I'm in a church. Like, because it's like, it's just the perspective you have, the place where you start in terms of how you perceive the world is so arbitrary. It could be anything. You read this thing in a book and you based your life on it? I could read a book about, hey, it's good to eat people, and base my life on it, and then I'd be a fucking cannibal. It's like, that's not how your mind should work. You should look at the real world and base your life around that shit. Shit that you can actually, like, you know,
okay,
prove.
But do you not see how people are to the point of such frustration that they can barely do it, okay? They can't. It's hard to think because they go through their daily life. They've got to fucking work how many hours just to make their rent, a roof over their head.
I mean, it's only reasonable that they'd succumb to cannibalism.
No, no. My point is, and then they look at their government, and their fucking government is shutting down.
What is this in reference to? No, what I was talking about.
Because you always say, you know, that people are so, like, easily indoctrinated and...
Well,
because
I think people have a responsibility to not be stupid. And so many people are. And to say that, oh, well, they're just too busy to not be stupid is such a stupid argument.
Do you not understand that the human populace has been studied for a long, long time? Okay, look at that show you just watched, the new one about the sexual. The one you want me to watch. With the guy from, with Michael Sheen.
Oh, Masters of Sex. Yes. I didn't necessarily want you to watch it. I thought you'd like it. But...
Masters of Sex. Okay. But what I'm saying is that's about a cop, Masters and Johnson.
Yeah.
Okay. And we've always been studied as a species, and the Central Intelligence Agency for a long time.
Oh, for the love of fuck.
Has been studied.
No. I mean, one, if you watch that show, you can watch the impediments they have to studying human behavior and biology.
My point is, you don't think that they know how to manipulate our emotional state?
Not really, because I think they're just as stupid as everybody else. I think once you realize that the vast majority of people around you are either as smart as you or more than likely less smart...
Okay, so in conclusion, what... would be gut-wrenchingly scary to you that you couldn't even watch, that you'd have to watch like I originally watched Texas Chainsaw? What would bring up such...
I mean, I can't think of a specific movie. I mean, because, like, I can watch the Body Snatcher movie now. I can watch Invasion of the Body Snatchers and enjoy it. I don't know, because... I honestly can't really think of anything... Maybe I've just been so desensitized.
Maybe. That's part of it. But it's like, okay, I use... sometimes I will watch Sophie's Choice, the movie Sophie's Choice, once a year. And I can literally only watch it once every couple years. Because it's that scene where she has to choose between her children.
Yeah. Oh, well, if you're talking about sad movies, I can think of movies where I can... Like, I can't watch it without choking up.
But to me, like, Sophie's Choice is a horror movie to me.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is, like, you know that channel they have on some cable station where it's, like, actual operations?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. If I know it's real, then, yeah, that's...
Now, that is a thing where I find really creepy, which,
like,
is
Faces
real.
Of Death, but, like, the real ones.
Yeah, Faces of Death. But no. I'm talking... As far as creepy, like, when I see it on a TV show or in a movie, because it's very real. The organ stealing. That shit is real.
Well... No, actually, it's a myth. They don't...
No, I can totally believe that shit happens.
Yeah, you can believe it, but you're believing a myth. It's an urban legend. It's never actually happened. But anyway, I don't know why...
The microphone looked like it was going to topple over.
Well, I don't know if we're going to... We may or may not go into a part two. I strongly suspect we're going to get 20 minutes into it and realize we don't have as much to talk about horror movies going forward as we think we do.
And I may pass out.
Stay tuned for that, or not. But in the meantime, this was part one, or possibly the only part, of our Halloween special, until we get to the cryptid one anyway. So the next week, we'll either be hearing more about horror movies, or you'll be hearing about a lot of cryptids that we haven't been able to get to. Anyway.
All right.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.